dangerous. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's saying in her sleep, brother's got a date to keep, you can't hang around.
Ayo's house in the middle of our street. Ayo's house.
Isle's house, Ethan and Jack here with you tonight. La La Land, Jackie in the house. Before we get into all the recent news, rumors, blue versus white scrimmage, and everything else, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Jack at Isle's Den. Rocco could not join us tonight, but follow him on Twitter at Pizza Sports Guy. Follow our page at Isle's House. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. This episode is going to be on iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube. We are everywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. So hit the subscribe button, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. And if you're listening, you can't see this. If you're viewing, you can. That banner on the bottom, subscribe to the Patreon. You get a ton. You get extra content. I think we've done 3 or 4 bonus episodes in the last 2 weeks alone. You get access to our Discord. It is the greatest Islanders community on the internet right now. We have a blast every single day. Discord access is only in the $5 tier. The insider tier, if you want inside information, goes all the way up to $25. Everyone's having a great time. Come and join us. All right. A ton of news. Jack, how are we today?
We're doing well. We're doing well. Good times in Isle's Land.
Great times in Isle's Land, some would say. All right. First up on the docket, I think we've reviewed this already in a Patreon exclusive, but let's talk about the Dobson trade because it really set the tone and kicked off this offseason for the Islanders. I'll let you give your thoughts first. I think you were a little bit more critical than myself, but let's see where we go.
Yeah, when the trade first went down and I saw the return, I was very underwhelmed because I saw the Columbus Blue Jackets offered a package with a first-line NHL forward, and I was angry, but we got on a pod. You and Rocco were trying to tell me my anger was a little bit misdirected, and upon sitting on it for a few days and learning more about the situation, I realized you guys were right, so... He did all right in that trade, looking back at it now. When it first happened, though, I was not happy. I feel like he was showing that he was a rookie GM just during that entire process. There seemed to be leverage lost at every turn. It felt obvious to me that Dobson was being traded. And I don't know. I just felt like the return was really not maximized, but Dobson did not help matters at all, and that anger that I had at Darsh should have been directed at Dobson. But now we sit here, it's July 3rd, Dobson's on the Montreal Canadiens, and where this team currently sits, I don't really feel the need to complain about that.
Fair enough. I think my thoughts on the trade have been made publicly known. I've not been a no Dobson lover over the last year or so. I think that's putting it kindly. Congratulations, by the way, to the Dobsons on their Canada Day wedding. Besides that, I think Darsh did really, really well with the return, given the circumstances. We've all seen the rumored package with the Columbus Blue Jackets. That trade nixed by Mrs. Dobson and probably, you know, by proxy, her husband. And that trade would have brought back 2 first-round picks, and I believe the player was Voronkov, Jack?
Dmitry Voronkov.
Dmitry Voronkov, a 23-year-old who had 20 goals last year, I believe.
20-something between 20.
A little over 20. Yeah, it was impressive for a young player. That trade was nixed. There were some other teams that were in the contest. We had heard the St. Louis Blues. That turned out to be true. That trade nixed as well once they decided that they didn't want to go out west. And, you know, early on, some talks about Utah wanting to make a big splash. Obviously, Utah having the 4th pick and the Islanders making numerous attempts to go up in the draft to acquire Hauppauge native James Hagans. That trade, I don't think it got as far as many think because Utah was not willing to meet his number. I believe they're still poking around the market for a defenseman. But Darsh did super well with the return. In a matter of how many months? March, April, May, June, 4 months. The New York Islanders have gone from a bottom of the barrel prospect system to probably one of the best.
I think I saw top five today.
And you know what? That top five, I think we'll talk about it. This isn't even in the rundown, but I do want to talk about the blue and white scrimmage. Maybe we can put that under what's next.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of this praise doesn't even include Daniil Prokhorov, who looked like a monster during the blue and white scrimmage and is someone that I am incredibly high on. So, again, I thought he had an excellent draft given the circumstances. The return on the Dobson trade, excellent given the lack of leverage. And not a player I am interested in tying up $10 million for the next 8 years on, given what this core looks like. The plan is very, very clear. Short-term deals, with the exception of Romanov, which I'm sure we'll discuss, and just figure out what you've got in the prospect system, figure out who's got what left in the tank, and build from there. And next year's free agency class, going to be a big one, not just for Connor McDavid, which is obviously unrealistic, but plenty of other names to keep an eye on. Okay, moving on to free agency day. Easily the biggest news of free agency day was me coming down with strep throat. So kudos to me for surviving. But Jack, I'll go to you first on your overall thoughts on free agency. Feel free to touch on some things that caught your eye around the league. You can even go into some of the deals that happened today with Ehlers signing with Carolina, which I thought was an underwhelming deal, as well as some of the moves the Islanders made. And there were a few that I really liked.
Yeah. So when the market opened, my initial thoughts were, okay, if you do nothing, you win, because these contracts were absurd. Referring to the Tanner Janot one, there were a few others that were just outrageous to me, but I'm just going to read a tweet back a couple months ago that I had, and it was after the trade deadline when a lot of our fan base was furious at Lou, and I actually thought I saw a little bit of the vision of keeping Palmieri and Pageau during that time, and I wrote, you need wingers to surround these centers. Keeping Palms at that discount is good. You need more wingers. So what did Darsh do? He got wingers. He got Shabanov, he got Drouin, and those are just two immediately good ads. He's going to re-sign Siplikov. He's already re-signed Holmstrom. So creating like very good help for these centers, I thought was really important. But part of the vision is to trade Pageau, which we'll get to in the what's next segment. But when I'm looking at these deals, he signed Jonathan Drouin to 2 years, $4 million each. He also got Shabanov on a one-year deal. I mean, those are two perfect signings because you have all these prospects in the pipeline now. You don't need to give out a long-term contract for tons of money to a veteran. So if you're going to sign a veteran, make it short. I don't even care about the price because by the time they're gone, you have new guys ready to come in, and that's exactly what he did with Drouin. So at first with the Dobson situation, I wasn't so happy, but after a good draft and then after doing exactly what I wanted in free agency, I have this guy that like I see the vision now, and I'm really excited about everything I've seen so far.
The vision is clear, and I really do like the vision. My issue, and it's like, Jack, you're quickly learning this amongst Islanders Twitter when you tweet out your opinions on certain things, is you're never going to win. You're never going to win. So, again, like despite me being a Darsh skeptic coming in, a pivotal offseason and a first-time GM, I thought he did excellent with the Noah Dobson trade. I thought the return was as good as you could get for a player that had all the leverage. I wasn't a fan of the contracts that he signed. You know, there wasn't any that really crippled them. It was just purely from a value standpoint. And I still give Darsh, I think in the Discord today, I gave him an A- or an A so far in how he's navigated the offseason, because I truly do believe he's done an excellent job. The Palmieri deal, I get it. You need wingers. Wish it was a lower AAV. The guy really wanted to be back. You see some of the other contracts that were given out to older productive players. And I know that there's going to be, you know, situations like Mr. He Who Shall Not Be Named up in Toronto took a sweetheart of a deal, especially on an AAV. Giroux took a sweetheart of a deal on his AAV. And I'm just not a believer in the, well, Lou negotiated it, it's in bad taste. Like, no, you have the cards. If the guy wants to be here, press on him a little bit. I think it's a bad look when Alex Romanov comes out and in his first interview after signing his 8-year contract extension says, I wasn't expecting to get 8 years. Me neither, pal. So, again, a guy who you hope in 2 to 3 years is no higher than your fourth D with some of the guys that they've just drafted. You hope Isaiah George comes in this year and looks really good. Aitchison in a few years, Schaefer maybe this year, maybe next, or maybe later this year. We still are trying to get some clarity on that situation. But again, there's a lot of sticker shock, and I can admit it. I get sticker shock with a lot of these new deals as well. But I believe the numbers sort of come out to the cap going up a total of like 28% over the next 2 years, which really means that in 2 years, Romanov's deal is going to be what's equivalent to like a 4-something now. So, okay, fine deal for a middle pairing left-handed defenseman. Totally fine with that. The Drouin deal, perfect. 2 years. I believe he's 29, 30 years old.
And he's a top six winger.
He's top six. That's all he can do. And they Patrick Wall already came out and said he's playing with Horvat. He's Horvat's winger. So we could already pencil him into that role. A guy who's been super productive, not like a point per game kind of guy, but someone who you can bank on for 20 goals, 30 assists, yep, something in that realm, and be totally fine with, especially on that AAV. And then we get to, I guess, what you would consider the biggest win of the Islanders free agency, which was the Maxim Shabanov sweepstakes. Came as a surprise to me. Jack, I don't know how you were feeling about it, but all month leading up to this signing, there were so many mixed reports out there. Some people put their stake in the ground and said, no, he's a Flyer. He's been a Flyer for weeks. They're just working on the deals. That turned out not to be true. And we know that when Lou Lamoriello was here, noted Russian aficionado Jim Palafito, who is just the Russian whisperer when it comes to these overseas prospects and getting them to sign, turning Elmont into they're calling it Little Moscow, Jack. They're calling it Little Moscow, and getting these guys here to sign. We had heard Vegas was in on him. That turned out to be true. The Rangers were in on him, and the Islanders were in on him, as was Philly. But it came as a bit of a surprise to me for him choosing the Islanders a little bit later in the process, because it felt like there was maybe a less defined role for him coming in, as opposed to if he were to have signed with the Rangers, who have basically two open middle six winger spots available. That they're sort of hoping that Gabe Perrault and Brennan Hoffman can win, but
good luck.
Good luck, right? And at the end of the day, it's Jim Palafito and the New York Islanders who swooped in. And on top of that, we'll play the clip in a second. Patrick Waugh spoke very highly of the player. Jim Palafito obviously did not give up on his pursuit of Shabanov despite Lou's departure. Jack, why don't you give your thoughts, and then I'll play the clip of what Waugh had to say on Shabanov.
When it comes to prospects, other leagues, I'm not really ever so informed on these players, but I knew there was hype around this kid, and seeing that the Islanders were in on it, the Flyers, the Rangers, whenever it's a Russian, I know we have a chance. But after we signed Drouin, like, come on, like, we're Islander fans. We don't expect to get everything we want in free agency. And like, leading up to it, then you just started to see, okay, it's just Rangers, Islanders, and then you see the report that the Rangers are the front runner, and it gets quiet. And like, I just thought, I really did not think this was going to happen. And then, of course, Elliot drops the bomb, and this guy is
right as the now. Right as the white and blue scrimmage is starting to cheers out of the practice facility.
It's so crazy how the vibes and energy around this team have changed this fast. Like from yelling from the fans, yelling in the crowd to fire the GM to like a round of applause and a sold out prospect scrimmage. You really can't make it up. It's insane, but very excited. Was definitely shocked, and I'm confused on our forward situation. Feels like
too many.
Feels like a good problem to have, but one that still needs to be addressed. However, you can't help but be excited.
Yeah, well, then we'll talk about the forward situation. But for those who like to look ahead, I've been made aware that the next Russian prospect we should be keeping an eye on is Daniil Amirzin, Danil Amirzin, much bigger than Shabanov, 6 foot, listed at 180 pounds. Playing for Cherepovets Severstal. I'm going to have to work on my Russian if this keeps up, especially if we're going to be gunning for Kaprizov in 2026. Super excited. These are the types of signings that teams should be all over.
Yeah.
1 year, no risk. The upside, the ceiling. It's crazy. Worst case, you move on after a year. What's the mean case? You wind up with like a middle six winger who's moderately productive, and the bull case being you wind up with the next Panarin on a 1 year tryout deal in North America. It's amazing. Let's give Patrick Waugh a listen on what he had to say about Shabanov.
That rule.
Have you gotten to watch a ton of Shabanov? I know he's somebody. Like, what's your impression of him? He seems like a really skilled guy.
Yes, he is, exactly. What I did like about him, he's a small forward, but he plays big. He's not, you know, he goes in traffic. He goes in those areas. And what I also did like is the way that he played in his defensive zone coverage. So sometimes you bring a guy in and you feel like the adjustment is going to be very difficult. But I don't think it will be for him because he's capable of playing well defensively. I know Benoit Gros was his coach, coach against him in junior. And Benoit is a very structured person. So he did a really nice job with him. So I'm pretty confident that the adjustment period for him probably going to be easier because, you know, if he doesn't score early on, at least he could rely on playing well defensively and give himself a bit of time to get his offense going, you know?
So very high praise from Patrick Waugh and another French-Canadian connection with the coach of Shabanov over in the KHL. So it seems like they totally understand what they're getting. I know that all the highlights on social media are going to be about the guy's dangles and his moves and his scoring. And he's obviously very productive offensively, but to have Patrick Waugh come out immediately and the number one thing he's praising is his two-way play despite his size, I think he's going to fit in just fine.
I'm not worried about it. When you have that much talent, I feel like everyone is just like anyone who's critiquing it, like just calm down, have a little bit of fun, look at the highlights and just get excited. And if that's what Patrick Waugh is saying, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. If Patrick's excited, I'm excited. All right. Anything else you want to touch on regarding free agency? Could be Islanders, could be general.
I think we're good from there. Great free agency.
You want to touch on Ehlers real quick?
Ehlers, yeah. I mean, how much? What did his AAV come in at?
8.5.
Yeah, 8.5 million for Ehlers. Yeah, I would have signed up for that. But I like the depth that they've built. I like the potential of the top six forwards at the low price. Like, okay, I'm happy with how it ended up. Ehlers would have been great, especially at that price. It sucks that he goes to Carolina. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and act like I wasn't really high on him and didn't really want him, but like it's whatever, man. Like it happens.
I mean, he's a guy that I flip-flop on, right? I think we had touched on this in prior episodes. Marner was really the only guy that I was willing to break the bank on this free agency. Not going to cry over Ehlers. I know that they had interest under Lou. I understand they had interest under Darsh as well. It's just a lot of money in term to give out to another guy I view in that same tier as Barzal and Horvat and Sorokin. Like, that very good, but I don't know if he elevates your core to that next level type of player. I know some people are going to disagree. I know Data Dom's listening, and he's going to say, I would have given Ehlers up to 10 mil. That's okay. Everyone's allowed their opinions. I was shocked at how low the AAV was. I was expecting at least 9, considering how many teams were in on him. We know Tampa, Washington, and Carolina were sort of the finalists there. But, like, I don't know, man. The Islanders have plenty of space. If it turns out that they're competitors at the deadline, they got plenty of space to add if they so choose. And if not, and they just want to stay the course, they can be that team that, you know, helps out and eats half of a bad contract and takes on draft picks for it and be totally fine. And that doesn't even include some of the other contracts that are expiring that they have that can get moved out, which I'm sure we'll touch on in the what's next category of this podcast. But not crying over Ehlers. I think some people might be a little disappointed, especially at that AAV, but we move on. All right. The Hamilton Tigers. Bridgeport is going up north. All right. I don't really know where to start on this one. Broke this news to the Discord, to the Insiders channel on June 1st. Pat myself on the back after having that one. Honestly, for at least a week prior. I can't remember exactly when I found out, but held on to it out of respect for Bridgeport employees who may not have even known about this at the time that Frank Saravalli broke it. And all I'll say is that they had plenty of time. The league knew that people were poking around on this. They knew that people knew. If the Islanders organization didn't notify employees yet, at that point, it's on them. It had been floating around for over a month. I know that it came up in the Ken Holland discussions. I can even try to find exactly what my write-up is. But Jack, your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks having an AHL team now, even way further away. I would have loved if they could have played at the Coliseum. But I'll be honest, I'm out here in Los Angeles now. Even when I was in the city and when I was on Long Island, I wasn't trekking over to Bridgeport at all. The only time I've even seen the arena was on my way to Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and it didn't look like it was in the greatest area.
When I drive to the cottage on the Connecticut shore, I drive by it all the time. Every time I drive by it, I go, man, what a dump.
Yeah, look, guys, it's Bridgeport. Everyone's like, oh, nice. But, yeah. Like, so cool. But yeah, with Bridgeport, I'm just not – there's a lot of people that are very heavily opinionated on this. And listen, like, for the locals in Bridgeport that actually go and support the team, I hate this for you.
You're talking about 50 people, Jack.
Yeah, but those 50 people, I feel like I'm connected with all of them through Twitter. So
They all probably follow us.
Yeah, I do have a soft spot for them. So that's a bummer, and it sucks. I don't know if this is like I don't know if it's beneficial. I don't know if it's
beneficial.
Bad.
It is beneficial. It's immensely beneficial. All right, so real quick, here's the write-up I gave to the Insider channel on the Discord on morning of June 1st. Sources, the 25-26 season will be the last season for the Bridgeport Islanders before they are relocated. I was told a few weeks back and had confirmed with multiple sources that the 25-26 season will be the last for the Bridgeport Islanders, and there are plans to relocate. I know there was a push from ownership to do this sooner for the upcoming season, but logistically it wasn't feasible. Now, I was told that during the Ken Holland conversations, this came up. A lot of people had heard from other insiders reporting that there were some who thought the job came with significant lift and assumed it was only NHL related. I believe part of these conversations were about Bridgeport's relocation. As to where the team is relocating, early indications are Ontario. Multiple sources have confirmed that a large minority chunk is being sold to a local group in Ontario. Furthering this, the arena in Hamilton is in the process of a full renovation. The kicker, it's an Oakview Group project. Sources say Hamilton Arena employees have been told that an AHL team is in the process of being relocated there. So that was my report on June 1st in the Discord. This is a great move for a number of reasons. One, the team in Bridgeport is bleeding money. And for an ownership group that obviously cares about the overall financials, you're never going to have a successful team in Bridgeport. People yearn romantically for the ferry in Bridgeport. No one goes to these games, and the team sucks. So, one, you're actually going to have a crowd and fans to play in front of in That's Ontario. True. Two, part of the reason that Bridgeport's been so bad is that they have an issue luring higher-end AHL free agents, right? What better place to lure them than if you're located in Canada? And I know it's going to be weird for the travel and the visas and whatnot, but it's going to be an overall better experience for the young guys playing in front of an actual crowd. And hopefully it's good for their development. And they're going to be able to hire, you know, they already made a few coaching hires. Rocky Thompson, which again, another thing that we had in the Discord a week before it happened. But this is going to be a really, really good thing for the organization, both financially and for the players, for the fans too, and the talent. I know it's going to be harder for those 50 or 60 fans that go to games and watch them. And, you know, I'd say I'm sorry, but I'm really not. This is a good thing. It's a really, really good thing. And I think it's just going to help the organization advance in this next stage.
I don't have much to add. Like, there's, when it comes to this stuff, like, I'm more on the Islanders and what's going on the ice. Like, when it comes to Bridgeport, the business side, luring AHL talent, like, these are not conversations I normally have. But
my arguments make sense.
They do. And I am happier for the players that they get to play in front of big crowds. Like, I think that's really, I think that's an important thing for them.
And in a nice arena.
Yeah. Like, you train your whole
life.
Newly
renovated.
They deserve the best of the best, and that's what they'll get there. It sounds like from Ethan. So I wouldn't say like I'm totally for it just because I'm not heavily opinionated on it, but it sounds like a positive thing.
That's fine. Even though people listen for the takes, Jack. So
I got no take on this.
Okay, fine. All right, the what's next category. So the Islanders have effectively rounded out their roster. It's almost too round. There are too many forwards right now. Still some guys that people are speculating on. Will they be here? Will they not be here? Let's start with Anthony Duclair because I feel like this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart. What do you think happens? And should I play the Wah interview clip before we start?
I actually will give my opinion and then we'll let Patrick take it away.
Okay.
So with Duclair, I'm looking at this roster. You have Drouin, who's a top six forward. You have Shabanov, who I think should be a top six forward, maybe not to start, but will probably trend in that direction. I'm going to choose the positive angle there. We have Barzal, we have Holmstrom, and then you go to the bottom six and you got Heinemann, you got Siplikov, you have Cizikas, you have Pageau, you have Richie, you have, did I say Engvall already? Yeah, I already said Engvall. And you have, like, you just have so many wingers right now. And I'm not going to lie, I look at a lot of these guys and I feel like so many of them play like a similar bottom six role where sometimes they're really good, sometimes they're really bad. But with Duclair, I feel like they signed him to play with Barzal and Horvat, and that was the reason for it, to try to get like a nice, cheap first line winger, and maybe you can catch lightning in a bottle. That's not happening anymore. Barzal's moving back to center. Duclair does not kill penalties. He should not be on power play one. I'm not even sure, looking at this roster, he should be in the forward group for power play two. I think Engvall's better than him. I think Siplikov's better than him. I know damn well Palmieri is. I know Holmstrom is.
Some crazy takes in there, but you should be strong. Go ahead.
You look at this roster, we have so many forwards. You have extras. Like, we haven't even touched on Gatcombe and McLean yet, but I already have penciled them in for the minor leagues. So I just feel like Duclair is the right winger to move off of. He's paid $3.5 million for the next 3 years. You're looking at this market. Tanner Jeannot just got that, I think, for 5 years. You could move Duclair. He has the problems with Patrick Waugh. You see, it's really odd with Duclair, actually. So he has a connection now with both the head coach and the general manager. And it's just like, that's what gives me false what word am I looking for here? That's what gives me hesitation to thinking he will realistically be moved, but that would be the winger that I choose. Anyway, well, let's let Patrick.
I'll play the clip. I'll play the clip for, and just for context. I'm sure everyone who's listening already knows, but Anthony Duclair suffered a groin tear early last season. Came back. What, December? When did he come back?
January.
Okay. Came back in January, was clearly not 100%. And eventually towards the end of the season gets called out by Patrick Waugh publicly in the media for his lack of trying, lack of, to quote Jack Capuano, lack of battle level, which led to Duclair taking a mental health leave from the team. Here's Patrick Waugh.
I spoke to him the day he left, obviously. I haven't talked to him since. Because it's not something I want to do over the phone. I will meet with him in Montreal or whatever he's going to be, and we're going to have a good conversation. I'm certainly going to apologize to him for my comments. I mean, and I'm capable of recognizing when I make some good ones, and I'm also capable when I make bad ones. And I would like to apologize to him, but in person, not on the telephone, and say, oh, I'd like to apologize to you. No, it's not how I want to do those things. I want to do it in person and for him to know, because I know it's he played for me junior. He knows how much I like him, how much respect I have for him. So, I mean, sometimes you say things after games and then you regret it, and that's one of them.
So that's Patrick Waugh on the Anthony Duclair situation. Jack, do you find it weird that they haven't really buried the hatchet yet?
Yeah, I find it very weird. It's just that whole answer was hilarious. Like, he just, just seems like a lot of uncertainty there. A
lot of uncertainty. Listen, I think a clear miscalculation on Patrick Waugh's end, a player that he knows going all the way back to juniors and probably felt comfortable calling out publicly, thinking that it would be okay. It would light a fire under his ass. It would light a fire under the team's ass and everything would be fine. Boy, did that not happen. And listen, I think that there's a great case to be made that Duclair could be the odd man out if everything worked perfectly and we could just make these decisions. But he is a player now coming off a mental health leave and off a torn groin, and I just cannot see any team being interested in that. And I think for better or for worse, I think he's in the opening night lineup. I think he'll be on Barzell's wing, and I think there are other players that are more easily moved. If they want, I know you're going to hate this, they can bury Engvall. It's not a big deal. Yeah, you mentioned Jack Cohn, you mentioned McLean, two guys you can bury in the minors. And God knows the Bridgeport Islanders could use it, right? Again, it's a crowded group, and we haven't even touched on Richie and Pageau and the whole 3C situation. But I just think a lot of these guys are just going to wind up in Bridgeport.
I mean, the thing is, Engvall finished the season on a very strong note. Felt to me like Patrick Waugh actually unlocked something in him. Duclair, it was just a disaster. Like, I just have trouble throwing Engvall in the minors after the end of the season. And look, he's done it before.
You know what? You know what is? You know it well too, though, Jack. Like, we're not talking about the same type of player. Like, Duclair is someone that you get because he's a cheap and can be productive with good center play in a top six role. Engvall's role is not that. Engvall is a quality bottom six forward if mentally everything's clicking.
That's true. But I even rather Siplikov playing in the top six than Duclair. I'm not.
I know
even,
you would.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's a hot take at this point. Like, I just – Siplikov has the skill. There's something to his game where I think he could be a really good playmaker and passer. With Duclair, I just don't see – I see the speed, 100%. I see that he can score. He could actually finish a little bit. But other than that, I just don't see as many qualities in him as I see in the other forwards in their defined roles.
And Siplikov's younger, and you want to give him a shot. Listen, I get it. It's just a logistics thing and where guys fit up and down the lineup. And I think at this point, personally, I'm penciling Duclair into a top six role until he's not here. And I think that's that. And I think we just have to live with that reality. And I don't, again, this is not a season where I'm expecting the Islanders to do big things. So, like, all right, man, whatever. Like, you want to send Richie down to the AHL to start and keep Pageau and try to bump up his trade value? Great. You know, you want to keep Engvall in a bottom six role? Okay. You want to waive him? Whatever. Like, these are decisions that weigh less on me, especially knowing what the plan is.
I just don't – when it comes to Richie, well, I guess we can shift there. We'll transition a little bit there. Yeah, so when it comes to Richie and him starting in the minors, I don't get why we would do that. He seems NHL ready. We have the winger depth now to where he's going to be playing with an NHL – with a good NHL winger no matter what. So I don't understand putting him in the minors other than, yes, we have a good head coach down there. They're building out a nice program, and you could throw him down there for 30 games. It just confuses me because I feel like ownership will want to build excitement around this upcoming season, as you alluded to. When you trade Noah Dobson, your first pairing right-handed defenseman, and your corresponding move is to sign back Tony DeAngelo, who we all love, like, that doesn't that doesn't exactly show that you're trying to win now. It shows more that this is a transition period, and what better time than when you're not thinking like a contender than to throw Richie right into the lineup. And when I'm looking at the right-handed defenseman, I don't see a great one there. Like, you have Pageau, you don't have the most cap space in the world at the moment. Teams
have got an okay amount,
decent, but teams are all over this center market right now, even before the season, because it's so barren. And you have Pageau just sitting there. You have Horvat as your first line center. You have or Barzal. Then you have Horvat, and then you could have Richie, and then you could have either Cizikas, or if you're, and you could even throw McLean there if you want to. But I think McLean will be in the minors. The whole point, though, you have the center depth now and the winger depth to move Pageau, and you could use the cap space even to help your right-handed defenseman. You can use it, or you could just hold on to it to improve the team further. You can gain assets, and I don't understand the entire wait till the deadline. If you wait till the deadline, you're going to get a crappier draft pick. Like, yes, you'll get first rounders, but from who? I don't want Colorado. I don't want Colorado's. I don't want Vegas's first round draft pick. I would rather roll the dice, send Pageau wherever the hell, whoever the hell wants him, take him, and like, sorry, I hope they have the shittiest season ever. Just take the risk, and maybe you.
Well, Jack, I hate to break it to you, but the only teams that are going to be in the market for a 32-year-old 3C and willing to part with a first for it are teams that are going to be good and competitive anyway.
Do you think there's any teams that are like on the rise? Like the Devils would be a perfect one to send him to.
And they've listen, I don't think that Darsh is getting back what he wants. Otherwise, he'd have been moved. And I made a bet on this podcast that I would eat a shoe if Pageau was traded this summer before the season.
There are just some teams in the league, like the Devils, where like they think that they're insane and they're a huge injury away from, you know, like being a very who knows type of team. If they would give you a first for Pageau right now, you'd do that in a
I don't think they're going to, though. Listen, we know. Another shout out to the insider tier. The New York Islanders were prepared to move Pageau on draft night in packages that would have helped them get up to draft James Higgins. That obviously didn't materialize, and Pageau is still on the Islanders. I don't think he's off the market. There are others who believe otherwise. I think for the right price, Darsh would let him go.
Do you know how silly people sound when they say, yeah, Pageau's off the market? Bro, he's a 32-year-old center on a team that has his replacement literally here ready to play games.
Who this wins 54% of his faceoffs in a defensive 3C role while still putting up half point per game. That's part of the entire argument why I didn't think that he would be moved, because he's so valuable. And I think everything that you are saying is correct. If you're asking me, I move him.
Yeah.
But I think, like, Darsh has a, just like he had with Noah Dobson, he's got a line in the sand. He knows what he wants for Pageau. And I don't think he's moving him for anything less than that. And that thing is probably a first.
I hope so.
And you know what? Listen, in an ideal world, Pageau is fully healthy. He's productive. He's winning faceoffs. And a team calls comes calling at the deadline and says, all right, Matthew, what do you want? I'll bend over for you. And here's JGP. And then in comes Cal Ritchie from Bridgeport. And all of a sudden, our deadline is exciting again.
You know, a team seems really desperate for a center, and that seems like they think that they're good. Vancouver seems desperate for anything. I mean, for them to pay Besser, I didn't even think that really made sense.
Me neither.
With EP40, they don't seem so confident. They were down to the wire to re-sign Suter, who went to the Blues, I believe. They just all seem like they are desperate and they are not good and they think they're ready and they're not. Like, that is a perfect team to send them to, but it's a fantasy though, because I think if some team was going to send a first for him, the deal would be done.
Agreed. So that's why I think he's very available. I don't think the price was met. And if it was, we'd all be penciling in Richie to be the center in either the third line or hell, maybe even the second line. But again, it's like, we have to view this team through the lens of Darche and Ledecky and Malkin. And that lens is they want to be competitive while still planning for the future. And I think maybe in a lot of sports, maybe in every sports, it's a fool's errand and not really a possible thing to do. But I think Brock and Dobson have sort of helped that. Like a team that has Barzell and Horvat and Sorokin and some younger talent and now Shabanov, like, they're not going to be bad. Like, I've been fairly down on the Islanders the last couple of years and pointing out very obvious regression candidates, as I did with Brock, as I did with Palmieri, as I did with Pelech and Pulock. Like, these were just guys who very obviously the tires were down to the tread and they had very little left in the tank. And I'm like, we'll get into this more as the season approaches. Like, I sort of think that this team is sort of now on the other side of that, where they might actually be better than a lot of people expect because they actually have real NHL depth now. And I know on the defensive side, not much has changed. We'll see if Matthew Schaefer makes the roster and what his minutes look like if he does. We'll see if George gets regular NHL ice time. We'll see if they move Mayfield. We'll see if there's any sort of bounce back for Pulock or any sort of positive regression on offense for Adam Pelech, who had, what, one goal this year on the most shots he's taken in his entire career. Some crazy stat like that. But, like, I see this team having more upside than teams in years past. And they did that while keeping a majority of their core, adding to their farm system, and keeping their cap table relatively healthy. So, like, I'm sort of excited to see what this team can do. I'm not penciling them in for a playoff spot or even a deep run, but I do think that they'll be better than I think a lot of people, even their own fans, are expecting them to be. And part of that reason is guys like Pageau, just like real solid veterans who still may be moved. But I think Darche understands what he has. He's got a defensively responsible 3C, half point per game, kills penalties and wins faceoffs that, like, NHL teams love this shit. Here's my price, meet it, or we're just going to keep him and use him to our benefit.
Yeah. I mean, the ceiling is definitely higher with the free agency they had than it was a year ago. It's higher, and the Metro isn't so good. We might not have a great defense, but we do have a goalie that's capable of stealing enough games. So this is going to be this will probably be the most fun season in recent memory.
Like, don't get me wrong, the defense sort of ass, but on the offensive side, you're hopefully going to get a full, healthy Barzell. Right? A guy who only gave you 6 goals last year, like, he could get back to a point per game, especially with the wingers. Right? So, him. I'm very bullish on Simon Holmstrom, as everyone knows. If he takes the next step, he could be a 60-point player next year. Horvat is going to be playing with Jonathan Drouin. Like, Horvat could have a 30-plus goal season. I see a ton of upside with this group. Emil Heinemann, hopefully he doesn't get hit by a car again. Who knows what we have there in the bottom six? Tsiplikov after a full year in North America. Shabanov could be unbelievable. Like, this team has just a lot of upside. And I think we're sort of tired of dreaming of that upside because we're so used to everything going wrong. But let's just go in with a little positive attitude.
There we go. That's what I've done the last few years, but now it feels like everyone else is going to be with me, so it feels good.
The tables have turned a little bit. All right. Anything else, or should we get into some questions?
No, let's get into them.
Okay, if I can find the podcast questions. All right, so if you're listening and you would like to leave a question for the next episode, you have to be a member of our Patreon. Sign up at the link, patreon.com/Isles House. It's only the $5 tier. The $5 tier, the toy department, gets you access to the Discord and gets you access to asking us questions to answer on the podcast. All right, question number one from Connor Young, C. Young, new member actually as of today, original Obstructed Views listener. With what looks to be the start of a skilled, fast, and fun team, does the idea of trading Lee become more appealing for the Isles, or would, in your opinion, that throw off the locker room? Jack, why don't you answer first? Because I'm very much anti the locker room narrative.
No, that's unbelievable, Connor, because as we were finishing up the last segment, I was thinking, wow, everyone's kind of forgotten that Lee is also expiring. We've all been so focused on Pageau, but I was thinking, I'll bring it up on the next episode, but I guess it's the next segment. With Anders Lee, it literally just popped into my mind, well, you have the wingers. Is Anders Lee still definitely a reliable first-line winger? He was good last year, but age, regression. I don't know if he still is one. We'll find out come October. We'll see the type of season he has. He plays a lot better. I think he played a lot better last season with Barzal. The results showed. I mean, yeah, I'd be open to moving him because I don't think he's a sure thing. Like, when I look at the roster, like I look at Barzal and Horvat as a sure, good first, second line center. When I look at Lee as like my first line left winger, I don't think it's a sure thing. I think it can go south. So his value is high. And yeah, the locker room definitely might take a hit without Anders Lee. There's no denying that. But I mean, you have a team that just stood in front of the entire draft party the day their quote-unquote star defenseman was traded, and they were all smiles. When Bailey left, they were professional. When Brock left, they were professional. When Beauvillier left, they were ready to go. These guys have a very good mindset, and they understand it's a business, the ones that don't have no trade clauses. So I think they'd be able to handle it, and given the new direction with Darsh, there's a very new feeling around the entire program, so I wouldn't hate it. I would be for it, I think, actually. So good, great question.
I think it depends on the return. I just don't know what Anders Lee gets you at the deadline. I want to say he gets you, like, if he's producing at like a 25 plus goal pace. I mean, a guy like that size with that leadership, playoff experience. I mean, he gets you a first and a top prospect, right? Like, that's for not sure. Crazy. Like a Brock
especially
return.
especially if you eat some salary on that. Yeah.
You know what? Maybe I'm just feeling soft tonight, but I truly leave it up to the player. I think you just like Brock, you come to him and say, "Listen, do you want to go cup chase? If so, give me your list, and we'll trade you to the best offer on that list. You don't want to get traded? That's fine. Here's like what we're thinking for your next contract. Like 2-3 years, low AAV. You're going to have a bottom six role. Like at some point, if some of these kids are coming up and are unbelievable, like you might be healthy scratched." And I think it would be foolish to assume that like this guy's going to be captain until he retires as well. You have Matthew Schaefer coming in. Horvat's primed for a C. Barzal's primed for a C. Like there's other options there. So it's a complicated situation. I'm not at all opposed to trading him if the return is good enough and if that's what he wants, by all means. But I think it's like a little bit more complicated than the Brock situation, personally. All right, this one's from Believe. If you were calling the shots, would you start Schaefer in the NHL or send him to college, and why? Anything you saw this week that swayed you one way or the other?
I'm starting Schaefer in the big show. He's the first overall draft pick. all of them always start in the NHL. Why does ours have to be any different? Don't take too much out of a prospect scrimmage, good or bad. He got hit a couple times. He fell. Okay, great time to learn how the contact is going to feel, even though that's not maybe the best example. But I'm definitely starting Schaefer on the big club, and he's a big part of it because we need puck-moving defensemen, and he can move the puck. Simple as that.
Agreed. I'm personally starting him. I don't know what will happen. We'll see. A kid his age, it's so easy to gain like 10 pounds. Like, yeah. Dude, if I was his age, bro, I could gain 15 pounds in a month. If you just like, here's some creatine and double the Schaefer Chipotle bowl. Boom. You don't even need 2-a-days in the locker, in the weight room. Like could put on the weight if he wants. So I'm pro. They don't have this type of skill set on the roster outside of like a little bit of Tony D. Me personally, I'm starting him. Okay. One quick second. Next question from the Bryman. Great job as always, boys. Love the offseason and roster turnover so far from Darsh with the infusion of speed and skill. However, my one main concern is who is going to provide the grit and toughness needed to protect our small skill set guys. Any thoughts?
That's actually a great point, and one that I'll definitely realize throughout the season. I'm going to take a quick look at like who is our tough guy.
It's Anders.
Yeah, Anders. And
it's Scotty, Anders Lee. If he's playing.
Scott Mayfield, Anders Lee, and maybe Tony can get a little active on that front. Because other than those three, I mean, I wouldn't exactly be terrified of them if I were opponents. But
Siplikov, too.
Siplikov's a big guy, even though Scott Laudon destroyed him when they dropped the gloves. So I don't know how.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes it's not always about winning the fight. Sometimes it's just about standing up for your guys.
He will do that, and he will hit. So those are a couple. But yeah, maybe we need to maybe on like league minimum, we need like one guy, like one enforcer. Go call maybe. Anaheim. You could probably get Johnston for free.
Maybe a Daniil Prokhorov's due for an early call up. Yeah. Missile on skates. Which, by the way, all right, I don't think this went like viral anywhere. But someone who was who it might have been Mr. 305, posted a video on our Discord from the blue and white scrimmage. As people saw watching the scrimmage, Prokhorov was like getting into it with someone on the other team at the fucking scrimmage, and the zoom in from Mr. 305's video, the GOAT, by the way, Mr. 305. GOAT. The zoom in, you read Daniil Prokhorov's lips. He yelled at the other bench, "I'll fucking kill you." Like, this dude is a psychopath. I absolutely love him. And then I forget the kid who's committed to Maine, the Long Island kid, Cabrier, I think his name is. Yeah. Is just like gives him the, "Yo, this fucking guy's crazy" look, fist pumps him, and then goes on to score an absolute nuts goal. So you need grit and you need someone to fire up the team. In a couple of years, it's going to be Daniil Prokhorov. That guy is a legend. I like probably my favorite of the draft picks from just like an all-around perspective.
It's Ethan's next jersey.
It might be. From K Nortz, what do you think the percentages of each player making the opening night lineup? Schaefer, Richie, Shabanov. I'll go first. Shabanov, 100%. Richie, I'll go 25%.
Wow.
And Schaefer, I'll go 85%.
Schaefer, 90. Shabanov, 100. Richie, 60. I still think he's going to make the team.
Okay. From our guy K-Mac, how should I really be feeling about Shabanov? On a scale of Jan Kovar, all versions, but specifically Islanders, to Pavel Bure, Vancouver version, where would you put this guy? 24 years old, small boy I know, but super skilled and fast. Feel like I am not as hyped as I should be. Jack, help out K-Mac. How hyped should he be?
It's always tough. I mean, the Islanders program, like other than a few very specific prospects, like there's not many to get super excited about. Same with free agency. We don't usually get that guy that's so, so exciting. So, hey, we don't know how to act. But with this guy, like I would treat it like he's a top three overall NHL draft pick that made your team and has been electric in training camp and you're expecting good things and you're excited, but you also know that you can't expect the world. So just keep the expectations realistic, but also just feel good about it. I wouldn't say Pavel Bure, though.
No, we don't do that here, Jack. Listen, if you were to have signed with the Rangers, you would have been a midget, massive bust. But now that he is a New York Islander, I'm going to call him Baby Panarin until proven otherwise.
That's the right way.
Yeah. From Ryan 0-4, assuming the Islanders do not make any trades to move out forwards and that Shabanov is making the team, it seems like the guys like Gatko, McLean, Engvall, or Duclair could have their roster spots in jeopardy. Rank each of these guys from least to most at risk of being waived. I'm happy to go first. From least to most at risk of being waived. Least, I'm going to say Duclair. I'm going to say Engvall, McLean, Gatcom.
Duclair, Engvall, McLean, Gatcom. So we're going to start least likely to be waived.
Least likely to be waived.
It's Duclair.
Yep.
And then it's Engvall, and then it's McLean and Gatcom. Did we have the same list? Same
order. Yeah, same list.
Yeah. What? Just it's funny.
Maybe you could flip flop McLean and Engvall, but. Just because McLean could be a 4C.
That is true.
Casey to wing.
That's a sneaky pick. I have like a couple of friends that are Islander fans, but they only watch when things are interesting. And we turned on a game towards the end of the season. And I just remember like the fourth line came out for a shift and they were like, who the fuck are these guys? These guys are AHL players, this organization shit. And I'm like, oh, damn, this is what the casuals are saying. So yeah. Like, you look at some of the ads we have, and like we have Heinemann. They're going to put Cizikas back at the fourth line. Like, Darsh definitely came in here and saw that fourth line and was like, yeah, we're going to need to tidy this one up, fellas. So I think that those two are – I don't really give them much of a chance, to be honest.
Yep. All right. Josh Elkin with a follow-up to Ryan's question. What guys have put on waivers could you see being claimed by another team? I.e. Nick Leddy, apologize. Thank you for apologizing. It's a shame what they're doing to my boy. It's being used in a money laundering scheme in San Jose.
It's a disaster.
I could see Engvall being claimed. Maybe that's a crazy take. I know the term sucks, but with the cap going up, I don't know, maybe a team will just take a flyer.
At this point, with the way the salary cap has gone up and the buyout, I think his buyout is extremely team friendly. I think there's a chance a team would finally claim him for the sake of Patrick Waugh's well-being as a human. So he better hope that happens. But yeah, I hope to not see him on waivers again. This time, I think somebody probably picks him up.
Okay. Esteban wants to know if we've heard anything about the Islanders bringing in Jason Giambi to help coach the power play. Shout out to Esteban and Mike Francesa. And then, speaking of special teams, Mustachio, who do you guys think will line up on power play one and power play two? Great question. I'm going to pull up the roster so I don't forget anyone, because when I was doing a roster sim earlier, I forgot that Kyle Palmieri existed. So I'm pulling up the roster right now to make sure I don't forget anyone. So power play one, Jack. I think the easy way to start this, Tony DeAngelo.
Yeah, that's okay. Easy.
Barzal.
Yep.
Horvat.
Yep.
Drouin.
Yes.
And I know who I think the fourth forward would be. It's not who I want, but who I think would be on there. Palmieri.
That's funny. I want Palmieri there, but I think it won't be. I think it will be Lee.
Okay. All right. So we differ on Palmieri and Lee.
Yeah. So I think we have the same power play unit, except you think it's going to be Palmieri, and I think it's going to be Lee, and we want the opposite.
No, I want Holmstrom.
You want Holmstrom on power play one?
I do.
God, you've lost your damn mind.
No, dude, that shot's electric.
it is when he uses it. And I also
what better place to use it than the power play?
That's true, but he's so passive in that. Like, maybe, you know what? He's getting older. Like, he's entering that prime. Like, the confidence is going to keep building. He had what? Do you remember that wicked shot he had against
from the circle, Montreal? Like the side of the circle? Yeah.
Yeah, he has it in him, which is the frustrating part, but I don't trust his shot yet. We'll see. I mean, he's going to get his opportunities. A lot of
you trust the shot, you don't trust his confidence.
Yeah, trust the shot. If you don't trust his shot, you don't know what you're talking about. He is one of the highest shooting percentages in the NHL. PP2.
I could see Lee, you're right. Like, if you've got Barzal on a board and Simon or Palmieri on a board, Horvat in the bumper, Shabanov? Lee in front. I could see him too.
I think it's Shabanov
instead of Drouin.
No, Drouin's like a specialized power play guy. Like, he is there. Like, he is part. That is part of the reason they signed him. They signed him to play with Horvat and to play on the first power play unit.
Okay. Power play two.
So I actually think they're going to start Shabanov on the first power play. I'm switching my answer. So power play two, here's what I got. I got Adam Boqvist. Who else would I like?
Over Schaefer?
Yep. It's going to be Matthew Schaefer.
Yeah, it's going to be Schaefer.
And you don't go two defensemen on the power play, right? So, all right. Back in the day, maybe. So yeah,
how crazy you want to get.
Yeah, so we have Schaefer. Oh, so we need another center for this. So I would have said Richie maybe, but I guess maybe it's going to be Pageau, Schaefer, Lee, Palmieri, Siplikov.
Okay. So in mine, I had Palmieri as the final piece. So it'll be Schaefer, Holmstrom, Pageau. I didn't have Lee, so I'll put Lee there. And I need one more forward.
Lee, Palmieri, you said
Lee, Holmstrom. Palmieri, Pageau, Holmstrom. Pageau. No, that's four. No. Yeah, Palmieri, I have on power play one. So in my answer, Schaefer, and then Lee, Holmstrom, Pageau, and I would need one more forward.
Shabanov,
I don't know, because then I'm leaving out Lee. This is a trouble.
It's tough. I didn't have Holmstrom in my power play unit either, which I'm fine. Which honestly,
I know you're fine with. You're a hater.
I'm not. I'm gonna have to lighten up on the kid. I just see a lot more. I do want
Siplikov on the power play too.
Yeah, I feel like he would do really well in the time and space. But the thing is, I don't think Wah agrees with me at all. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how he's deployed this year.
Oh boy. All right. We're done with the questions. Thank you for everyone who submitted. Reminder, if you want to submit questions for future pods, sign up for the Discord, the Patreon, Dime Club, not the Dime Club tier, I don't even remember what our $5 tier is called, but the $5 tier. I'm losing steam quick here, Jack. anything else before we get out of here?
No, that'll do it. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you guys for listening. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe, and check out the Patreon. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Ayo's house in the middle of our street. Ayo's house.